Brian Garland is in studio. Brian, how are you, sir?
I was good until this afternoon and you decided to tweet.
Let's get the social media elephant out of the room. So for anyone tuning in that hasn't seen the tweet on my Twitter, S Dawson Sports, actually retweeted by Game On, so it'll be more easily accessible there at Game on Twitter, was Brian Garland starring... What year was this? When was it? A good few years ago.
Starring 10 years ago or so.
Starring in an advert for Wynn's Hotel. And, I mean, listen, it's classic acting. The author of... Listen, well, we do
generous.
Have... we do have to say, so you're here, you have a book out with Mark McCann, One Last Shot. And Mark, I was actually on to Mark earlier and he mentioned the acting in it, because there's the ad, there's Fair City, there's Love Hate, and there's an RTE opener many years ago by Eamon Donoghue for the first game in the new Lansdowne Road?
Yeah, the Aviva, yeah.
Okay. So, listen, I had to get it out there, but credit must go to our broadcast coordinator, Lauralee Davis, for somehow unearthing this footage. I don't know how she does it.
Even I couldn't find it for the last few years. I was trying to show the in-laws there for the crack and couldn't dig it out. Got onto a couple of people, they couldn't get it, and they were to do with the production. So, okay. Yeah, fair play to her.
Okay, well, it's out there now on Twitter until the production company can have to take us down now for rights. But no, listen, fair play. It's out there now anyway. And David Snade texted me earlier, regular contributor to the show, being like, how on earth? And I've asked Lauralee twice already, and she hasn't answered me. So, listen, it is out there now. On a serious note, the book's out, One Last Shot with Mark McCadden. It's done really well the last couple of weeks. It was top of the charts. And it's a great venture. It's not something we're used to seeing in the League of Ireland, I suppose. I know John Caulfield has one out as well. But in terms of how it came about with Mark, I know Mark, he's a really good guy. How did it come about? When was it first mooted, and why did you do it?
It was Liam Hayes with Hero Books, a small publisher, and they do a lot of GAA books, Game of Your Life and stuff like that. And he decided he wanted to get into the League of Ireland, and there's no League of Ireland books. So I think John was their first one, and he thought... after the Dundalk and Cork rivalry, it'd be good to get Dundalk side of it. So, listen, he might have approached one or two others beforehand, I'm not sure. But when he approached me, it was 2019, so it was nearly 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I said no, because it wasn't the Dun thing, it wasn't the League of Ireland player thing. What would the lads say? Sure, who'd buy it?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff. And
Were you self-conscious about it then?
Completely.
Because it's very open, and I do want to touch on that, but in terms of, like, it's you're revealing yourself to the world, you're having to be open and honest with Mark, who I assume you didn't know that well beforehand.
Yeah, that was part of it, because I said no, and then Liam asked me to meet him, and I sat down and met him and said, worth hearing him out, and he gave me plenty of reasons, and a few of them, you know, stuck with me. And I have a couple of businesses, so it's good, obviously, publicity, if it comes out well from it, and that sort of has a profile for that, gets them maybe a bit more notice. But the main thing was, I'm always encouraging the younger players the last few years and stuff, step out of your comfort zone, do stuff, and I thought to myself, that was, you know, I'm taking the easy way out here. And the other thing is, League of Ireland, I'm giving out the whole time, they don't do enough promotion. We don't get enough exposure. We don't do so. A bit hypocritical if I turn around and don't try and do my part for it. So I wanted to show the League of Ireland in a normal light, and that's why I've said if I'm doing it, everyone says it's very open and honest. And there was no point doing it if I didn't do it that way. I saw it was wasted, because you're always going to say what if or leave something out.
Yeah. No, it is, and I think it's a book that I am a League of Ireland fan, I'm a Shelburne fan, but I think for even people that wouldn't have an interest in League of Ireland, that might just be a casual sports fan as such, that it's wide ranging. We talk about the acting and kind of doing something different from League of Ireland, but even the intricacies to the rivalry with Cork that we will get to, and everything that goes with it. But in terms of of how you thought other people would react. And I didn't want to talk about the sports side of things, but I mean, from the very start, for someone that might pick this up and be like, oh, that's Brian, longest serving player for Dundalk, you know, played in Europa League and a legend of the League of Ireland. But you dive straight in with Mark. I mean, the prologue mentions your father's passing, and that's when I thought, oh, okay. And then the very first sentence is, I was 15 years old when Mam and Dad separated. Bernard Gartland was a drinker. He had problems with depression. I mean, that's so open at the start. And listen, I'm a nobody. Nobody wants to hear my story, but I come from a single parent household, and I'd find it so difficult to talk about that and so difficult to put that into words. And you start off the book with that. I mean, that's totally different. Was that a conscious decision you made to say, I want something that it isn't necessarily about sports straight away?
No, all credit to that goes to Mark. Mark, like I said, it was his first book, and I knew Mark, we knew each other, but not that well, and he became my therapist, I suppose, when you go into that sort of stuff. But he's done an incredible job with it. I was delighted with how it came out, and it got my words across, because it's very hard to transcribe someone's thoughts and feelings and everything. Mm. You know, I might say something and two people could be there and hear a completely difference. But Mark has nailed a lot of it. And when I got the first edit across, I suppose, of the first bit, it was like that. I liked it, and I liked what he did with it, because everyone sees you as the footballer. Mm. It's just a footballer. And like you say, you come from a single parent. And I thought when I was that age, I was like, why me? You know, why am I in a house like this, or why do you have to deal with this? But as I got older, I remember thinking, this is normal. You know, it was so common with divorce in houses, I suppose, especially in the 2000s, you know, late 90s going into 2000s.
And yeah,
it became a lot more common. And as you got older, I realised that. And things like that, they are what they are. That was your life. And it's nothing groundbreaking, or it's nothing life-shattering. That's my story, and it's only part of my story. We had loads of great times, you know, but that was a mega event, I suppose, that created me and my emotions. And it's probably those hard times that have got me through, you know, created the resilience in me. And it can always be worse, and you have to get on with things, I think. So that shaped my life going forward, and my personality as well.
Did that make you stronger in terms of your leadership? You're a captain of Dundalk, you lead a dressing room and such, having the responsibility on yourself and your brother as well growing up, because you were always an able athlete as well. I'm sure you were always kind of top of the, when people are picking teams, you're probably always up there, be it in football, in Gaelic games, or in basketball, that those experience outside of sport build the character of who you are on the pitch.
Yeah, I think outside sports and growing up really builds a character. Like my mother, I talk about her in the book, like her resilience going through tough times, and she ended up director of Littlewoods for I don't know how many years, and she worked from the bottom up to that role, and while going through this at home that no one would know about and stuff like that. So without knowing at the time, like, it's an example set for me, and you know, you just have to get on with it, because you know, life goes on outside your door. So yeah, I think everything outside football and everything growing up will shape a person in some way, and all the people that are in their life will shape them. Like I said, examples, just people rub off on people, especially on the kids. So yeah, so that's why I think it sort of was a real moulding experience, and I'm hoping that's, you know, made me better for that, like I say, resilient, and have a bit of leadership and take things by the scruff of the neck in football, like I had to in outside life.
Mm. No, I genuinely, it struck me when I was reading it. I thought it was beautiful, a beautiful opening, and I mean that sincerely. I'm not trying to be melodramatic, or it's not hyperbole or anything of the like. Growing up then, you didn't just play football. Obviously, people know you as the footballer, but you have a strong, keen interest in basketball and Gaelic games for Ballyboden, St. Enda's. So is there a case that in a different world, I could be sitting here talking to Dublin footballer Brian Gartland, or NBA export Brian Gartland, or was it always just going to be soccer?
No, I think it was always going to be soccer, and that was recognised. I probably held a bit of a grudge against a couple of coaches when I was younger, because, you know, didn't get a fair crack of the whip. Maybe at a certain thing, or should have been into the Dublin Development Panel or the Ireland team in the basketball, but as I grew up, and like I said, even doing the book, you recognise when you're older then that they knew football was my love, my first love. It was my dedication and trying to be a Premier League footballer. So when it did get to the competitive thing and the clashes, football was always picked over Gaelic and basketball. But like, most Saturdays would be three different matches. You know, when I was 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, you go from one match to the other to the other.
Yeah.
And absolutely loved it. Loved it. Every sport, but especially those basketball and Gaelic as well, yeah.
Well, let's talk about what you're, I suppose, most known for, and that is playing for Dundalk. And you touched on earlier there a few moments ago, the rivalry. And let's just dive straight into it, because the League of Ireland hasn't had a really proper rivalry. It's always been kind of friendly rivalries, and yeah, we'd have to go back to even Pat Dolan, Ollie Byrne days, or maybe when they had an actual bite into it. But I was struck by one of the paragraphs in it in terms of being the leader for Dundalk, and a few Cork City fans were politely offended. You're a brave man offending anyone from Cork in the first place, to be honest with you, Brian, let alone put it down in words. But one of the paragraphs in it was, 1 year after we put the League of Ireland on the map, after we showed not only the country but Europe that an Irish team could compete by playing an attractive brand of football, Cork City long balled their way to the league and FAI Cup double. Ouch. As far as I was concerned, the shine was taken off our double a couple of years earlier. If a team like this could do the double, I thought, is it really that big of an achievement? Cork had their own way, it was effective, but it wasn't pretty. But that's football, and there are many ways to win a game. So there's a bit of bite in that, and I wonder, is the style of football important to you?
Yeah, it is, and especially after Stephen Kenny, because like I said, people mould you, and Stephen Kenny's moulded me for the last 10 years in terms of what I think of football and how I like it to be played. Like, I talk about a time in the book when we're keeping the ball and we go across and across and across, and it was in training, and Stephen goes mad, and he goes, and we go, we're keeping it, we're not letting them have it. And he goes, you have 2, 3, 4 opportunities to go forward. Attack, attack, attack. He'd shout that in the dressing room, attack, attack, attack. And little bits like that would stick in my head. Like, and that's the basics. That's we were possession and keeper. But when you had the chance, when that opening arrives, forward, attack. People are here to be entertained. He'd say that in the dressing room. So we loved winning. But we loved winning, playing that style of football and playing entertaining style of football. Like, listen, the players I played with, they were magic. You know, they such talent. So listen, I just give it to them. I do my defensive job and know my strengths, and I give it to the lads that were pure technical ability and flair. But it did come in. And that was my thoughts at the time in terms of Cork. Listen, they changed a bit after that, and I say that in the book. I think it might be their downfall a little bit, because they were so good at what they did. They got the better of us then in terms of the long ball. And then when they did pick up the seconds, they had electric players in terms of Dooley, Beattie, Jimmy Keohane would have been there. Sean McGuire was a nuisance.
Yeah.
Like, his goals that year were ridiculous. He was gone halfway through. So, listen, I'm sure Cork fans were excited watching them at the time, because it was entertaining for them. They were attacking as well.
And they were winning.
Yeah, and they were winning. I think they went 21 out of 22 their first games and something like that. So, a few people weren't happy with it. But listen, like I said, football's opinions. There's many ways to win a game.
There was a bit of bite on a trip that both Cork and Dundalk were away, and it's detailed in the story. But I wonder, is this the sort of rivalry that, there was a genuine bit of bite, but would you be friendly with any of the players now? And I ask that in mind with, if you cast your mind back to the Dublin Mead GA rivalry and how that 91, the saga, and it was proper, and his lads just thumping each other on the pitch. Yet, I was chatting to Charlie Redmond recently enough, and he was kind of saying, we meet up for a golf tournament now every year, and it's the Dublin and Mead sides, and they had a dinner in the Mansion House back in the 90s as well, and they're like really good friends now. Now, I know time has passed, but in terms of now, would there still be a bit of animosity between certain Dundalk and Cork players, or would it be just all forgotten about and friendly now?
No, not one bit. It's same, it's on the pitch, and I think that's healthy, that's the way it should be. Like, Marco Sullivan, myself and himself used to batter each other, we kick lumps, and even in the game we turn around and laugh, or a little high five, and could be chatting. But once the ball was there to be won, that was it. Off the pitch, I'd love to go for a pint with him. He seemed like a great fella, lovely fella. And that's the way it would be. There's other lads that were playing for Cork then, and you see them now, and you chat away, and it's a respect. You know, you hated each other then on the pitch. They were stopping you from achieving, or trying to stop you from achieving what you wanted, and that was a battle, and you had to deal with it. And that rivalry, that sort of grudge, is brilliant. Like, you think back to Arsenal and United in the Premier League, and we say, why don't we have that now? You just don't have that. Like, you don't have to be all smiles and rosy with them on the pitch. You can be, like I say, competitive like that. And when you roll off the pitch, it's, listen, fair play, you won or I won, whatever it is that day, and we'll go again in a couple of months.
You shake hands and get on with it. Pictures of watching Sky Sports and whatever else in Premier League of players hugging and chatting and laughing in the dressing room before you go out, and it shouldn't be the way, but I wouldn't say the League of Ireland's that way, to be fair. And perhaps that's what's unique about the authenticity of our league. You mentioned there when you're talking about Stephen Kenny that even in the dressing room he said, we want to play entertaining football, or this is about entertainment. Was that always the mantra of Stephen Kenny, regardless of who you were playing?
Yeah. With, obviously, you know, intent, if you have to change your play a little bit, obviously if you're going out in Europe.
Mm.
But even that in Europe, and listen, in our heads, we were probably questioning it sometimes. So we're going, Preston, 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 we're going to play in Bate, or we're going to play in Zenit St. Petersburg, and we're going all out on the press and leaving ourselves 1v1 and exposed, or 2v2, and leaving space in our half, which is kind of unheard of. And even in ourselves, we'd be saying...
Was it hard to buy into then?
No, because at that stage, listen...
You'd go to war for Stephen.
Yeah, and everything he touched was golden. He just gave you this belief, and he gave you, you know, with the instruction, this belief of... You are capable. Like, that's only a different name on his jersey compared to yours. And we used to have the sort of mantra, go out there, it's 11v11. It doesn't matter about the 30 million he's getting that year in wages, you know, or everything in the background at that scale. But then at the same time, when it came back to the league here, no matter who you were playing, top or bottom, it was, everything was orchestrated to, I suppose, manipulate your mind to have you up for it and get you up for a game. And I talk about attacking play and entertaining people. Like, that was reiterated to our wingers over and over and over again, because we were blessed with great wingers like Daryl Horgan and Mickey Duffy under them, and you know, crowds loved them. They're just so exciting to watch. I loved watching them when I was sitting at the back. But Stephen would be pushing that. Obviously it's result orientated as well, but he's one of a kind that way.
In terms of influences on your game and you as a person, from a sporting side of life, I'm assuming Stephen would be right up there. Who else would be up there in terms of advice that you've been given over the years?
There was a coach when I was younger, Alan McGovern. He was an FAI coach, but at Knockline United. He was, I think, brother-in-law of the coach that we had, and he was coaching us, and he would have moulded me at that age in terms of all my defensive organisation and stuff like that. It was, yeah, I owed a lot to him. I followed him. He got a job over in Verona in Blanchardstown then, and I followed him there just because he went, leaving Leicester Celtic. And I used to spend, I think the M50 was getting redone. I used to spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours from school on the south side, going over, go training and back, two, three nights a week. But yeah, he would have taught me so much. The likes of Mick Cook, gave me great belief as well, you know, backed me. And I suppose in sport, like, I can go into all my coaches, because the other sports, the likes of basketball and Gaelic, especially basketball, in terms of learning plays, tactical stuff, screens, especially sitting screens, you know, for set plays, for corners and stuff like that, and just movements. And I think doing that from a young age, my head was just coordinated that way. It would, you know, it would think in a certain way because of that sport. So I've a lot of people in sport that way. Jerry O'Brien was a principal in my primary school, and he did breakfast basketball at 8 o'clock every day before school for 6 years. So, you know, 5 hours a week with him every week for 6 years. And that was for nothing. That was just for the kids to play. So there's so many people I owe, you know, over a life. That's I'm probably leaving out some as well. Like
that's natural.
You can go. And then the ones that, you know, I talk about, Dermot Keighley in the book, I spent a year playing under him and wasn't my most enjoyable year, but I would have learned so much. So from even the people that, you know, you think you didn't like or didn't enjoy, you still, it's a big learning curve, especially as a young athlete.
You mentioned the people that influenced you, and you mentioned in the book about visualization techniques. So the night before the game, you imagine all the set pieces, the goals, keeping a clean sheet, etc. How does that come about? Was that something that was advised to you, or like I doubt that's something you just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to start doing this now.
No, and it wasn't. And it wasn't a motivational thing. It just sort of happened. It probably goes back to, you were at the game, Shelburne against Kildare. It'd be my first competitive game for Shelburne and first league debut. And just visualising scoring in front of our crowd.
Mm.
It was a new era for Shelburne. Shelburne's a massive club, and obviously, you know, a lot had happened in the off season. And I was just thinking, right, imagine scoring in front of that crowd. It's every little boy's dream. I was, I don't know, 19 maybe at the time or so, and it's every kid's dream to grow up playing football. Listen, you're visualising it first of all when you're young in the Premier League and for Liverpool and my team and stuff like that. But it just happened that I'd be going to bed dreaming of what I want to happen the next day. And I suppose it sort of happened that night.
Yeah.
And I scored 13 minutes in. And I, just always continued that ever since. Just sort of visualisation of positive things rather than negative things. A couple of times in my career, I suppose the negative thoughts came in and, you know, has the opposite effect. So you learn as you go and as you experience. And I tried to manipulate my own psychology.
Your time at Shelburne then, so that match you're referring to was a 2-2 draw with Kildare County in 2007. And that was the first game of, I say, the new Shelburne era. Dermot Keighley had to put together a team on a very shoestring budget, and Shelburne were very close to going out of existence. And if you talk to many Shelburne fans, people will talk about the European days, more recently the promotion in Drogheda. But I think genuinely that match is probably a lot of people's favourite match because they still knew. I think on extra time, I said there were 1,600 at it. I think it was a lot less, to be honest with you. But it was at that time that they knew they still had a club. So you scored the goal for a new era. But you mentioned Dermot Keighley, and tough love, I suppose, is the phrase that would spring to mind. You mentioned about hating him or coming away hating him from the experience at Shells. So the good, positive influence you had, how difficult was it to play under Dermot at the time and to turn that into a positive aspect for yourself?
Yeah, it was difficult. We'd all a young team, like you say, it was a shoestring budget, so it was kind of like a lot of young players taken from other clubs, from other under 21 teams. And Dermot was a different generation. Dermot's one of the most decorated players, managers, and, you know, up in Dundalk, he's a hero up there from, you know, his playing days. But I suppose it was a clash of generations. You had this new generation coming in that they don't take the tough love. You know, it was more arm around the shoulder and Billy Modley Cullen.
Do you prefer that management?
No, I think, listen, I think you need a bit of everything.
Okay.
I think you need a mix, and I think every player needs a different mix, and it's different times, they need different things, and players sometimes mightn't respond to the tough love, but it's what they need because they need to toughen up.
Okay.
And I think it was a great learning curve for me because, you know, like I said, with other stuff, you sink or swim, you just have to get on with it. That's life. Take it or else it's not for you. So you learn to roll with the punches, to take the hard bits, and then Dermot brought in other players and I didn't play much in the second half of the season. But you learn. You're involved the whole time. You learn and you see how other people react to it as well when you sort of step back from it but still in the environment. I came away sort of with a disliking for Dermot because of it. But that was me young and thinking the there and now. As you grow older, you know, you think back and you appraise everything and you look at things and say, well, listen, it's probably done me well.
Mm.
So, and the league was a tough league then. you know, it was a lot more physical. Young players,
first division,
first division as well. It wasn't about football. It was about being solid, not being bet, not conceding goals, and you'll get a goal. And you know, I had a lot of naivety that way, thinking, listen, come in and play football and
do see all what that. Happens.
But yeah, it, it was a different story. But I still played plenty of games, so I got a bit of experience that way, and then a lot of experience from the other side. I met Dermot 10 years later on the bus, going from Dundalk to Dublin.
Okay.
And we sat for the hour or hour and a half and had a chat the whole way down. It was brilliant just chatting. And, you know, all preconceived ideas. We were just talking football in Dundalk at the time and stuff like that. And yeah, you grow out of those things as you're, you know, as a kid then. So completely different. But I wanted to put in the book how, you know, mindset might be that way at one time. And then as you grow and you learn experience, you sort of, you think back and you think, right, I could have been wrong there, or there was positives from it anyway.
You could, I remember vividly from going to Shelburne matches that season, you could hear word for word Dermot Kennedy shouting constructive criticism, I think, at players. But what was Stephen Kenny like when he got angry? Because I know on your 30th birthday, no less, he got a bit of a dressing down, to put it politely.
Yes, you don't want to be the wrong end of Stephen. And I think that every manager needs that. You need an element of fear. There needs to be repercussion. There needs to be, no matter what age you are, whether you're my age now or you're a new lad coming in, there has to be that element of fear, because there needs to be authority without it, I suppose, going over a line, for people to stay in check, for people to, you know, not step out of line. You're trying to manage 20-odd players. You're always going to have one or two that might be at a weak moment or a bad moment or stuff like that. So they need to have this little voice in the back of their head saying, oh, I don't want to cross him, or I don't want to, you know, get a rap.
Mm.
And yeah, Stephen, if he's great crack and he's, you know, brilliant character, but he can lose it. I suppose that's the other way of putting it as well. So, and he can be to the point and precise and that way. And you don't want to be on the end of it.
Okay. It can be personal, but again, constructive. Your time at Dundalk then, it's gone to unfathomable heights. There's obviously a very low point in Dundalk in its more recent history, to be fair. How enjoyable has the journey been for you? Because I know you're married, you're settled there now, your in-laws are from the area, I'm kind of right in saying. Yeah. So you are an adopted child of Dundalk now. So does that feel like home now, and that's the club? Because I asked that, I suppose, with in mind that when you signed the new deal, there was a chance you might have left the club.
Yeah, that was probably 5 years ago, wasn't it? 2017, but we weren't running that well, and Cork were unbeatable for the first 6 months. Yeah, the talk was, you know, was that the end of us? Was that Dundalk sort of dynasty gone? A few lads had moved on to England and different places after. And yeah, you have to explore options, because I suppose you have to look at everything on the table, because it's unpredictable. You know, maybe Dundalk were going to have a better option than me. So you have to.
I doubt that.
You have to keep your things wide up. Well, the way I was playing that season, I'd say they were looking for one anyway. But yeah, I married a girl up there, Brona, and we've two kids there now. We've a house, and the parents-in-law live 8 doors down. So yeah, feet firmly under the table up there. So it's an hour up the road. I've still got my mother down here and friends down in Dublin, sort of thing. So like a lot of people, I suppose, it's commuting in and out to Dublin the whole time. But it the town's been great to me. I could never have imagined the last 10 seasons, the ups and downs.
You're the longest serving player there now in the current squad.
Yeah.
So yeah. That doesn't come by chance, put it that way. Does it feel like it's on an upward trajectory now with Stevie's back there, and given the uncertain times recently, does it feel, is the buzz back?
Yeah, it really is. I think after the last couple of years, a lot of up in the air stuff, a lot of stuff in the media that wasn't positive, there was a lot of negative connotation, you know, going around on and off the pitch. With COVID, it didn't help, but the club lost its link with the community and the town, and like they really are a tight connection when it's going well, and when that connection is well, it's, you know, if the club's going well, the town's going well, it's buzzing, and you can feel that back again. And then the environment in the club, it's night and day. You know, it's the culture, the players that have come in. It's a great place to go in. You're looking forward to going in every morning, and it's smile on the face and it's crack, and it's hard work. You know, so there's a good balance, and then there's an environment there for, we have young players in now and phenomenal talent, and their ability and potential, you know, is limitless, and they're being given an environment now where they can thrive. They can go as far as they want to go, but they have to take that opportunity, and that's what Stephen Kenny did years ago, and that's what is being created by the club and the management now. And you can see that, and I can see even just in the involvement of, say, the last 4 months since we're back into the season or so, 3-4 months, is the involvement of players. Even if I just look at the physiques, you know, it transcribes how they're living their life, how they're eating. They're not going out on the drink the whole time. Hmm. They're doing gym sessions away from our own gym sessions, or they're doing whatever they have to do to better themselves. You can see all these little bits coming together. And you know, it's brilliant to see. It's brilliant to see that back. There's still so much work to go and to improve and on and off the pitch. But once you can see some positives, you know, you're hoping it'll snowball then and keep going that direction.
How bleak were the tough times? Like how difficult? You mentioned about getting up and there's a spring in the step and you're going into work, you're going to train to be a footballer. But how tough was it when things were very uncertain at the club? Like, we only kind of, I assume, see half of what's really going on in the media or in the public domain, and I know there's some things I have to say in the dressing room, and that's completely fair enough, but how tough was it?
Very tough, because there was an emotion attached to it. You know, there's a lot of love from players that have been there for years, and there's this, because of all the times we've had at the town, you know, with the community, winning all those things, those experiences, you develop a connection and a bond. And when other people come in, whether it be above you in club owners, management, players, and things aren't going well, they mightn't have that. They might just, well, you know, I'm still getting paid and so on. And that's not to say anyone is, but that's easy, because you don't have that extra bond. And then to turn it around, I suppose, is very difficult, because players don't have control of that. You know,
did you feel there was an onus on you, though, because you were such a leader of the group, to try and turn things around?
There's only so much one person could do. So whether it's you're a player, a manager, or whatever, if the top is broken and not functioning correctly, then it's going to seep down through everything. And that's how I see it was. Listen, this is just my opinion. And it was difficult. And you can see from all the media throughout the whole time that there was a lot of, you know, a lot of noise the whole time, negative noise. And that seeps into a dressing room. So it's very hard for the players. And then performances weren't good. So you're getting it from the fans from the other end. And then, yeah, I suppose the tough thing was for the lads that were in the town, and there was only a few of us, that we were the only ones in the town. The chairman wasn't in the town, he was in Florida. You know, the sporting director might have been living in Belfast, or, you know, he wasn't constantly in the town, or wasn't involved with the community. So you get all the questions. You get a little bit of flack, but it's not really. It's just people saying, what's gone wrong there, and what's going this? And Jesus, that was, I won't use the language. And it's really tough to take that. So, so it can be quite tough mentally, because, yeah, it's just how to deal with that. And it's something that, I suppose, you don't know if you can deal with it until it comes.
Yeah, I suppose it's all experiences. Brian Gartland, unfortunately, time is against. I would love nothing more to continue chatting. Just very, very briefly, tomorrow evening's match, Dundalk Pats, the Stephen O'Donnell derby. how much are Dundalk players looking forward to that? Just very briefly, because we are very stuck for time, unfortunately.
Listen, we look forward to every game, and at the moment the lads are on a great run. They're flying. So there's lots of confidence, and it's going to be a tough game against Pats. The last day, it was, you know, a draw probably was a fair result, so we're hoping we can improve on our performance against them the last day and keep this form going.
I assure you, be in the hunt for a League of Ireland title in no time, Brian.
Thanks for having me on.
You're a gentleman. Listen, Brian Gartland, One Last Shot, an autobiography with Mark McCadden. As I said, I'm not just saying it because Brian is seated opposite me, but it is a great read. So it is in all good bookstores and a few non-good ones as well, I'm sure. Brian Gartland, thank you very much. Do stay with us on Game On here in 2FM because there's lots more to come.